It began as a quiet spring afternoon, April sunlight spilling over the streets of Brooklyn Center. A silver car rolled to a stop under the red flash of patrol lights, the rhythm of a city still bruised from an earlier wound. Dante Wright sat behind the wheel, one hand gripping the steering column, the other texting a friend that he'd be home soon. Two officers approached from either side, voices calm but layered with authority. The air thickened with routine words. License, registration, step out for a moment, please. A nervous laugh, a heartbeat too fast, then the shift. Confusion. Shouting. The sudden crack of a service weapon that should have been a taser. In seconds, stillness swallowed sound. The traffic lights blinked green again, indifferent, as another name joined the nation's long echo of grief. Chapter 1. The Stop. The afternoon sun pressed low over the rooftops of Brooklyn Center, that soft Minnesota light that looks clean enough to breathe. It was quiet. A few blocks away, school buses were cutting their routes, kids were drifting home, and the sound of early spring wind moved through the trees like radio static. On that street, a silver Buick slowed under a yellow light. Dante Wright had the windows cracked, music rolling soft through the speakers. He had one errand left, and a quick drive ahead of him. His phone vibrated beside the gear shift. A text from his mother blinked on the screen, just checking in. He smiled, the kind of small smile that happens without thinking, and turned the volume down. Then the lights flared in his rear mirror, red and blue, pulsing against the dashboard. His shoulders tightened. He eased the car to the curb. The world, for a moment, became a tunnel. Two patrol officers stepped out of their cruiser. Their boots hit the asphalt with the calm rhythm of repetition. To them, this was another stop in a day of stops, a minor violation, expired tags, maybe a warrant check. Routine. Dante looked at the mirror again, breathed out slow. He had been stopped before, but each time felt like the first, heart climbing, hands uncertain. He told himself to stay still. He glanced once at the passenger seat. A friend's hoodie lay crumpled there. Faint smell of cologne mixed with car freshener. The officer came to the window. Afternoon, sir. You know why we stopped you today? Dante's voice was quiet. No, officer. I don't. The officer explained, tags, air freshener, a routine check. He asked for license and registration. Dante fumbled for his wallet. The edge of the card caught against his fingers. He passed it over. The officer looked at it and nodded, walking back toward the patrol car. Minutes stretched. Dante tapped the steering wheel with his thumb. Outside, the light changed and no one moved. It felt like the world was waiting. He texted his mother again, "They pulled me over." At the cruiser, the officer radioed in, checked the records. There was a warrant. Not violent, but outstanding. The kind that required protocol. Backup. Caution. They called it in, voices steady. The second officer approached again, a calm tone rehearsed 100 times. "Mr. Wright, can you step out of the vehicle for a moment?" Dante hesitated. His breath caught. He asked, "What's going on?" "It's just a quick matter," she said. "Step out, please." He opened the door halfway, one foot on the pavement. The air outside was cool, smelled faintly of exhaust and new grass. He heard the chatter on their radios, short, coded words that didn't belong to him. Something in him tensed. Maybe fear, maybe confusion. He looked over his shoulder at the open space ahead, the sound of cars passing. The moment swayed. The officer reached to guide his arm. Dante pulled back slightly, reflex more than intent. The movement was enough. Another officer closed in. Voices overlapped. "Don't run, don't." "I'm not. Stop right now." In the next heartbeat, everything blurred. Dante tried to get back into the car, half-turning, his foot catching the edge of the frame. The officer beside him reached for what she believed was her taser. Training took over. Or maybe memory failed her. The weapon rose, steady, aligned with her voice. "Taser! Taser! Taser!" The sound that followed was wrong. A single sharp report split the air, echoing off the houses. The recoil, the smoke, the silence. Dante's body slumped forward. The car rolled forward a few feet, coasting until it struck another vehicle and stopped. The officer froze, eyes wide, words caught in her throat. "Oh my God," she said. "I shot him." For a second, no one moved. The radio kept speaking, detached and calm, as if it hadn't heard the world change. The officers rushed toward the car, shouting for help, for medical, for anything. But the sound of the city began to shift, a ripple of voices, sirens waking up, neighbors stepping out of doorways. Across the street, someone started recording on their phone. a shaky frame, hands trembling. The image would later circle the globe, but in that moment it was only shock. The first responders arrived in minutes, though time had already lost its order. They cleared the scene, pulled yellow tape from their kits, sectioned off what used to be a normal street. The sun kept moving, indifferent. A paramedic leaned into the driver's side, checked for pulse, then looked back at the officer. No words were needed. She stepped away. The other officer, the one who fired, stood by the car door, her hands trembling, face pale. She whispered again, "I thought it was my taser." Overhead, a helicopter circled. News crews would come soon. People gathered at the edge of the tape, mothers, neighbors, strangers who had only heard the sound. Someone whispered his name. It spread quietly, then louder. Dante Wright, 20 years old. By nightfall, the street would be a memorial, candles lined up on the curb, photos taped to lampposts, music from a small speaker playing songs he liked. The neighborhood lights flickered against the dusk. Inside a nearby house, his mother stared at her phone, the text still open. "They pulled me over." She tried to call. No answer. The line went to voicemail, his voice still there, calm and living. In another part of the city, command officers gathered in a quiet room. They replayed the footage, the body cameras, the radio logs. Each frame carried the weight of something irreversible. That night, the streets filled with sound. Not traffic anymore, but voices. Shouts that climbed into the air, words that demanded to be heard. What had started as one stop on one afternoon had opened a wound that already existed, one the city had tried to heal. The flashing lights still painted the pavement. Cameras caught their reflection, the swirl of red and blue bending into purple, a color halfway between warning and mourning. And somewhere above, the sky turned gray with smoke. The day ended where it began, in silence. Only the hum of engines and the low thud of distant footsteps remained. What had happened could not be undone, and by morning, everyone in America would know his name. Chapter 2: The City Trembles. The night air in Brooklyn Center trembled under the low hum of helicopters. Streetlights blinked through a thin haze of exhaust and tear gas, casting halos that made the pavement look wet. The neighborhood around 63rd Avenue was no longer quiet. It had become a gathering place for grief. By evening, dozens of people stood behind the yellow tape, holding candles, phones, or each other. Some wept. Some stared in disbelief. The sirens hadn't stopped since the afternoon. Inside a small apartment on Humboldt Avenue, Katie Wright sat frozen at her kitchen table. The phone still in her hand, the message still on the screen, "They pulled me over." She had driven toward the scene when she lost contact, her heart pounding against the steering wheel. Now, hours later, she watched the news replay the video that the world would soon see. The anchor's voice trembled slightly, naming her son, describing the incident. Her husband stood behind her, his hands on her shoulders, speechless. The screen glowed blue against their faces. Outside, the first chants began. The voices were soft at first, almost prayerful. Then others joined, and the words found rhythm. "Say his name. Dante Wright." The crowd swelled as the evening deepened. Reporters arrived, their cameras turning slowly from faces to flames. Someone lit a candle, then another. Someone else shouted, "Not again." The city had seen this before, George Floyd's face still painted on murals just 10 miles south in Minneapolis. The echoes of that trial were still alive, still unfinished. Police in riot gear lined the street, shields up, forming a wall between the crowd and the station, their faces unreadable behind clear visors. Every few minutes a command crackled through radios. Every few minutes the crowd surged forward, then back. Across the city, people watched from their living rooms, from phones, from buses stuck in traffic. The story moved faster than anyone could contain it. By midnight, Dante Wright's name trended across the country. In a quiet precinct office, officers sat around a long table, faces gray from exhaustion. The chief stood at the front, speaking low. The shooting officer sat apart, her hands clasped tight, staring down. Legal counsel whispered near her, voices barely audible. Words like training error, mistaken weapon, body cam footage filled the air. None of it sounded human. Outside, the chants turned into a roar. Bottles clinked against pavement. Sirens wailed. The National Guard was placed on standby. The next morning, the governor addressed the state. His tone was careful, trying to sound both firm and compassionate. He promised a full investigation. He spoke of restraint, accountability, and healing. But on the streets, The sound of healing was drowned by the crack of rubber bullets and the hiss of pepper spray. By noon, local shops boarded up their windows. Churches opened doors for rest and water. A makeshift memorial grew around Dante's name: flowers, posters, basketball shoes, photographs of him smiling. Children left drawings, hearts and angels scribbled in marker. A hand-lettered sign read, "It could have been my brother." Reporters interviewed neighbors who had heard the shot. One woman said she dropped to the floor with her kids when she saw the lights. Another said she still heard the echo every time a car backfired. At City Hall, officials shuffled between meetings and press briefings. The mayor, tired but resolute, faced the cameras and said, "We failed him. We failed again." His voice cracked on the word again. In the evening, thousands filled the main street. They carried signs that said "Justice for Dante Wright" and "End the stops that kill." The chants rose into the cold April air, echoing through apartment blocks. Some people knelt, hands raised. Others sang hymns. The officer's name had now been released. News outlets flashed her photo alongside Dante's. Two lives, two faces, one moment binding them forever in tragedy. Inside the police department, the atmosphere was brittle. Officers whispered about resignations. One sergeant leaned against a locker, staring at the floor. "It's all falling apart," he said softly. "No one trusts us anymore." That night, the protests grew louder. Tear gas drifted over the crowd. The National Guard trucks rolled in, green under streetlight glow. People coughed, cried, scattered, then returned again. The air was filled with chants, smoke, and phone cameras capturing every second. By midnight, Brooklyn Center was a mosaic of light and noise. Helicopters hovered like mechanical stars. Streets glowed red with taillights and anger. In one corner, a woman prayed aloud, clutching a Bible against her chest. "Lord," she said, "not another one. Please." In another part of town, young organizers worked out of a church basement. They drafted statements, arranged legal help, coordinated food and medics for the next day. Their leader, a woman in her 20s, looked at her team. "This can't fade by next week," she said. "We can't let this fade." The following morning, the courthouse was surrounded by cameras. Journalists from London, Tokyo, and Sao Paulo waited for updates. The footage played again and again. The officer's shout, the single shot, the silence. Experts debated, lawyers analyzed, commentators spoke of training failures and race and fear. In the Wright household, the family tried to grieve privately, but privacy was gone. Strangers left food on the porch. Letters poured in. A pastor visited, held their hands, said the only words he could: "You're not alone." On television, officials debated whether the officer should face manslaughter or murder charges. Each phrasing felt clinical, as if law could measure the loss. That evening, Dante's mother stood before microphones. Her voice was calm, trembling at the edges. "My son was loved. He should still be here." The crowd around her murmured, "He should still be here." Cameras flashed. The wind pushed against the microphone cover, making the sound crackle. Someone handed her a candle. She held it high. The flame bent, but did not go out. Behind her, the city skyline flickered between blue and red lights. Across the state, curfews were announced. The world felt smaller, corners closing in. In the following days, the protests spread beyond Minnesota, to New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Atlanta. Streets filled with signs, fists, songs, tears. Police lines met marches. The same phrases were shouted from coast to coast. And in the middle of it all, the question lingered. How could something so routine end like this? The city trembled, not just from the noise, but from the weight of memory. Each night, the candles returned, no matter how many times the wind blew them out. Each morning, new names were added to posters, as if the story had no ending. For every voice demanding peace, another demanded justice. Between them hung silence, the kind that only comes after too many sirens, too many goodbyes. When dawn came again, Brooklyn Center looked the same. But nothing was. Chapter 3. The Reckoning. Morning came gray and heavy, a colorless sky hanging low over the city. Brooklyn Center looked quiet again, but it was the quiet that follows exhaustion, not peace. On 63rd Avenue, the memorial had grown. Balloons tangled in the wind, flowers wilted under April frost, candles leaned and dripped wax down the curb. The photo of Dante Wright smiled from every corner, his face frozen in that easy grin, gold chain glinting in the sunlight of another day. Inside the county courthouse, the air was colder. Reporters lined the hallway, their shoes tapping across the marble. The officer who had fired the shot, Kim Potter, walked in flanked by her attorneys. Cameras caught her face, pale and drawn. The flashbulbs popped like miniature explosions. Someone shouted a question, but she didn't answer. In another wing of the building, Dante's family sat together in a waiting room. His mother clasped a small wooden cross in her hand, thumb rubbing the edge smooth. She wasn't thinking of law or verdicts, only the last text, the unfinished day. Her husband sat beside her, eyes red, jaw set. They had rehearsed nothing for the cameras, yet every movement would be watched, every tear broadcast. Outside, the courthouse steps filled with people. Some carried signs, others just stood in silence. A pastor led a short prayer. "Let the truth come out," he said softly, voice trembling. "Let it mean something this time." The trial began with the sound of formality, prosecutors reading the charge, manslaughter in the first degree. The defense countered, "It was a mistake, a human error, not malice." The words floated in the still air of the courtroom, cold and clinical, while families and onlookers listened for meaning between them. Body camera footage was shown again. The jury watched the same seconds everyone had seen on television, but in the room it felt closer, heavier. The gunshot echoed faintly from the speakers. A few jurors flinched. One wiped her eyes. When the video ended, the silence was unbearable. Then the prosecutor said, "This was not just an accident. It was a choice, a consequence of training, of decisions, of what we allow." Outside, a crowd followed each update on phones. In the evenings, they gathered around the memorial site, listening to portable radios. The city waited, holding its breath. Weeks passed. Testimony after testimony. Expert after expert. A police trainer explained the difference in weight and feel between a taser and a pistol. The defense spoke of confusion, stress, human imperfection. Each word built a different version of the same moment. In church basements, people debated what justice meant. Some said it meant conviction. Others said it meant prevention, change, a future where no one else would have to die for a mistake. A mother in the crowd said quietly, "I don't care what they call it. I just want my son to come home." The verdict came on a winter day, months after the shooting. Snow drifted over the courthouse steps, melting on the shoulders of those who waited. When the word guilty was read, there was no cheer, only the sound of people exhaling, long and slow, as if they had been holding their breath for a year. Inside, the family wept. Outside, the crowd held each other. Some cried openly, others just stood in stunned silence. It didn't feel like victory. It felt like something smaller, a brief flicker of accountability in a storm that had not yet passed. Kim Potter was led away quietly, her hands cuffed before her. She looked back once, face blank, then disappeared behind the door. The courtroom emptied slowly. Reporters ran to file stories. Lawyers packed their papers. The judge remained seated for a moment longer, staring at nothing, as if the weight of it all had settled in the empty chairs. That night, the memorial at 63rd Avenue glowed brighter than ever. Hundreds came. The street was closed off, candles lit from one end to the other. The smell of wax and flowers mixed with cold air. Dante's mother stood before the crowd. She thanked them for standing, for marching, for remembering. Her voice broke halfway through. "My son mattered," she said. "Don't let them forget that." A long silence followed, then applause, soft at first, then rising like a wave. As the weeks went on, the protests thinned, the cameras left, but the conversation stayed. In classrooms, people spoke about policing in fear. In training academies, officers rewatched the footage as part of new safety modules. Politicians debated reforms, budgets, oversight. Across the country, Dante Wright's name joined the list. One more symbol, one more reminder. Yet for his family, symbols meant little. His room remained the same. His shoes lined up under the bed, the scent of cologne still faint in the air. His mother sat there sometimes, hands folded, remembering his laugh. The city kept moving outside her window, the seasons shifting, the memorial shrinking as the candles burned away. In a small park near the courthouse, someone painted a mural. A young man standing against a backdrop of clouds, one hand lifted toward the sun. Beneath it, in white letters, the artist wrote, "Justice is not a finish line. It's a beginning." People came to see it quietly. Some left flowers, others took photos. Children traced the letters with their fingers. A year later, the flowers had faded, but the mural stayed. The paint cracked slightly under winter frost, yet the image remained clear. And so did the questions. How do you measure justice? What is enough? Can a single verdict balance years of fear, training, history? Brooklyn Center tried to move on, but memory has a way of lingering. Every traffic stop carried a new tension. Every siren brought a flicker of dread. Still, the city endured, its people determined to push toward something better, even if the road was long. At night, the lights of the memorial still shone faintly, tiny flames in glass jars, flickering against the dark. They looked fragile, but they didn't go out. In the quiet, the sound of wind passed through the trees. Somewhere in that sound was a name, carried forward, not as an echo, but as a vow. Dante Wright. The city whispered it like a prayer.